I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, we hear about a program that tries to end street violence by interrupting it before it starts. But first, everywhere you turn, you see bad news about the news business, shrinking ad dollars, staff layoffs, and hostile takeovers. One big exception is the growth of ethnic media, magazines in particular. A 2006 report by the Magazine Publishers of America said that 257 new magazines debuted in 2005, including 31 for women, and a total of 26 aimed at blacks and Latinos. But what's the mission of these magazines? And given the fast-changing demographics in America, are ethnic or women's magazines really niche anymore? Joining us now to talk about this are editors at three popular magazines for women of color. Betty Cortina is editorial director of Latina Magazine. She joins us from our studios at NPR West. Anitha Malik is founder and editor of East West Magazine. She joins us from Phoenix. And Tasha Robertson is senior news editor at Essence Magazine. She's in our New York bureau. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
No, I think Essence, I think, is the gray lady in the bunch. Is that correct?
I think it is.
Not you, but...
We're almost 40 years old
40
now.
Years
yes.
old.
We have 8 million readers, and most of them are African American, although about 30% are African American men.
Really?
And so, yeah. So, you know, yeah, we're growing. Like you were saying earlier about, you know, is this still a niche? And I think in a way it really is, because our focus is definitely black women. And we think about her all the time.
In fact, on the binder, it says where black women come first, right?
Yes. So, okay. And that's, you know, that's our main interest.
Okay. And Betty Cortina, how old is Latina Magazine?
We turned 11 this year, actually.
So you're a teenager.
We're just a teenager. We're still growing. But we are growing enormously. And we have about 3.5 million readers now. We've grown a lot, in particular, in the last 5 years. And it's still niche, even though it's growing and it's big, because we, too, focus just on the Hispanic woman and above all, on her experience here. And it's written in English, which I think surprises a lot of people.
What I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is that ever debated? Is it ever thought that perhaps it should be bilingual or
It's actually a big debate both inside and outside of the community. And the inside part of it is interesting because I think it's been a long-held myth that Hispanics are to be spoken to in Spanish. Well, the fact is that more than 40 million Hispanics who currently live in the U.S. were actually born here. I think people forget that. Those are American citizens who went to school here, who were educated in English, and who do something like read a magazine, which is really about relaxation and entertainment and getting information. They do it in English. They prefer to do it in English. So the language issue aside, it's about culture. It's about our experience of growing up in the U.S. and being as American as we are Hispanic and wanting to preserve that and not feeling that we have to give up any one side of us.
Anitha, what about you? Why did you want to found East West?
You know, when we started East West about 3 years ago, so we're the baby of the group.
You're the baby.
Yeah. There was nothing really for the Asian American market. It's a very underserved market, but yet a very prominent market in our society.
There are a number of Asian American newspapers around the country in different communities, but there was no kind of national glossy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. There was no national glossy, and there was nobody that was really focusing on the pan-Asian environment. I think we have the most unique challenge because we're really looking at an Asian community that within itself is extremely diverse. And so to bring those people together, nobody was doing that and trying to find that common ground. And so that's what we strive to do in our own unique way.
Betty, I wanted to ask you, is there ever a tension between being aspirational and covering kind of the nitty-gritty issues that are affecting the community?
We do a good job, I think, of covering both and being aspirational on the one hand with respect to how we want to live our life and what we want in our careers and our families and, of course, with fashion and beauty. But I don't think that there's a tension because I think, like any other woman, there are moments in which you care about your hair and there are moments in which you care about community and your family. And it all makes sense under this one big halo of Latina. So I think the biggest tension we have is really figuring out every month for a woman who can buy any other magazine that she wants to buy because she's Hispanic, but she obviously feels really comfortable reading in English and taking in media in English, is what do we do that really sets us apart from the enormous number of choices that she has? You know, 11 years ago when we launched the magazine, it was enough for us to be different to put Jennifer Lopez on the cover. It was enough for us to be different to put Salma Hayek on the cover. And boy, 11 years sure changed everything, because they're on every Vogue. Cover in America.
Yeah, Vogue, Glamour.
Exactly. So that really sort of forced us to go back and say, well, okay, if that's not enough to make us different, then what is?
Talk to me about, and I'd like to ask each of this, about an issue like immigration, like how you would cover an issue like immigration. Anita, do you want to start? Because this is an issue for the Asian American community as well.
Yes, actually for the Asian American community, it's a very big issue right now with the point system that's going on. And for us, I mean, really it's about getting into the stories of these individuals and looking about how such a system and removing family, the point system with families and removing that, it's really going to change the Asian community in a big way, because immigrants that come here and, you know, are the ones that the point system would reward are coming from countries where family values and that bond is so strong that you're expecting them to prosper in an environment where they're not going to be able to have that. And you're not rewarding the people that have been here and have gone through the system.
Betty, what about you? I read in a recent issue a first-person account of a woman who crossed the border illegally. It was very evocative, and it was exactly what you're talking about. It was the kind of thing you just don't see everywhere else.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that story really sort of represented what we try to do, which is to remind people that behind the issue and behind the debate and the policy and the 380 pages of legislation are actually real people.
Tasha, have you guys ever been accused of performing more advocacy than journalism? Where do you draw the line?
There are some editors, I think, who believe we should focus on advocacy journalism, especially when it comes to African Americans. I come from a background where, you know, it's really about journalism and being objective. But I think anytime you're writing about a particular group, no matter, you know, how objective you may try to be, this is advocacy journalism. I mean, there is a perspective, and you just can't get away from that. But I think we work hard on always getting both sides, always being objective. But we make no bones about it, you know, who our focus will always be. Some people have criticized that or looked at that, but there's never been a question that our focus is African-American women, and, you know, the stories will focus on their needs and on their interests.
Sure, but African-American women include, you know, Dr. Condoleezza Rice, right?
Yes, and, yes.
Dr. Mary Frances Berry.
And we cover them. I mean, we cover we cover Condoleezza Rice. We cover African-American women in general. But when we ask the hard questions on both sides, I don't think we've ever been accused of not asking the hard questions.
I wanted to ask, at the risk of, you know, alienating somebody on your staff, what's the hot feature? What's like your most popular feature? Tasha, why don't you start?
I just have to tell you, I worked on this, so maybe I'm going to be a little biased, but it was a story we just wrote. We had a writer in Chicago write about R. Kelly's wife.
Who most people did not know exist.
People did not know exist. I'm not joking. Millions of readers read that story online within days.
Literally millions.
Millions. I mean, we were counting. Literally millions read the story online within days. And, you know, we worked hard to get her, like months and months, because she never talked to anybody. So that's really been our hot feature.
For those who don't know, R. Kelly, of course, is a very well-known R&B star who's had some legal trouble related to his alleged involvement with underage girls, an underage girl in particular. Anita, what about you? What's your hot feature?
One thing we're working on right now that we're really excited about is the portrayal of marriage and divorce in Bollywood. Bollywood is something, of course, that across the world is so popular and is definitely becoming something bigger in the United States. And that film industry has always focused just on the wedding and the happiness, but they don't really get into the marriage aspect of things. And then, of course, the big D word in the culture, which is divorce. And that is something that's becoming more common amongst Asian and South Asian Americans here, is the struggles within the marriage. And so now, is Bollywood, which is something they look to paralleling their life, or is it going the other way around? And you're starting to see a shift in those films, which is very interesting. Mm. So we're working on that right now.
I can't wait to read it. And Betty Cortina, what's hot in Latina magazine?
The things that really press buttons, believe it or not, have to do with fashion and how to dress a real woman's body. And so anything that has to do with curves and accenting your figure and healthy looking women and real women is really, really popular for us. And I think it's taken on a really interesting importance given what's been going on in fashion and in particular on the runways in the last couple of years, where these bodies that look punished and absolutely anorexic are what you see. And so for us to sort of go out there with women who don't look like that, who look real, who are actually a size 8 or 10 or 12, is really, really different. And it's just rewarded by our readers. You know, we did a feature that we still hear about over a year ago where we dared to put a size 12 woman in a string bikini. And she looked fabulous, by the way. We still get mail for doing that. And we
really
get applaud because people thought no one else would actually have done that and said that she looked beautiful. So I think it's a really interesting statement about what the images you see in general market magazines.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining us. I can't wait to get my latest issue of Latina, East, West, and Essence in my mailbox. I'll be looking forward to those. I was speaking with Betty Cortina, editorial director of Latina Magazine. She joined us from NPR West in Los Angeles. And Anitha Malik, who joined us from our member station, KJZZ, in Phoenix, Arizona. She is the editor of East West Magazine. And Tasha Robertson, who is at our NPR bureau in New York. She is the senior news editor for Essence Magazine. Ladies, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.